As clinicians, we know that administrative burden takes us away from patient interaction and care, continuing education, clinical decision-making, personal and family time. Eventually, this leads to burnout. Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and today we'll talk to Dr. Nigel Gurgurau about administrative burden in clinical practice and what to do about it. Dr. Nigel Gurgurau, welcome to Modern Practice. So tell us a little bit about your background and your current role.
Well, Tom, thank you for the invitation. It's really a pleasure to be here. I am a practicing transplant hepatologist. I moved to New Orleans from Toronto, Canada in 2007. And over the years, I've had a number of traditional physician leadership roles that included being the chairman of the GI department here at Ochsner. I've been the medical director of the multi-organ transplant program, the associate medical director over our medical specialties. And then in the last couple of years, I've assumed this physician executive role as chief wellness officer, where I lead our Office of Professional Well-being and our efforts to promote well-being at our organization.
What an amazing career. Thank you so much for joining us.
Most welcome.
So let's talk about administrative burden. Man, I know what I mean by that as a practicing clinician, but can you give us your perspective on what you mean by that? And quite honestly, this has taken on a life of its own.
It really has. And I'll give you my perspective. I think, Tom, on the one hand, there's the job that you and I signed up for, to have direct patient interactions, to have interactions with our colleagues, to be a clinician, a healer, and even a scholar. And then there is the increasing amount of time that we're having to spend in our electronic health records. And these are tasks such as writing notes, putting in orders, returning messages, returning phone calls. And year over year, this has really taken up a greater percentage of our time. And most of this time is computer facing. It can be smartphone facing, but it's certainly not patient facing or colleague facing. And I think most of us find this sort of increasing duality in our roles less fulfilling.
Yeah, it's kind of taking on some of those clerical roles that in the earlier part of my career weren't even part of my existence.
It really has. And you can't open up an article on burnout or well-being without having 70% of it written about our electronic health record system. And let me be clear, I think an electronic health record system is great. It's really the regulations that have been attached to how we use our EHR.
Yeah, I agree. So how's this further burden the practice of medicine?
Well, the issue is these administrative, clerical tasks, whatever you call them, can spill over into other dimensions of our life, and usually do. So for instance, it can spill over into after work, and this has been coined pajama time. And this often takes time away from our family, our friends, our hobbies, our personal needs, such as self-care. It can erode into our lunch hour. And this over time has led to less time interacting with our colleagues. And often it can interrupt direct face-to-face time with our patients, which really just creates distractions, increases what we call cognitive load, and this can drive burnout.
So it's kind of invading the boundaries of our personal lives and our personal time, but also the time we spend with our patients, which frankly, we see as sacred.
Yeah, definitely. And when you think back to med school, we recruit med students into this profession, and usually their attributes are they want to be there for their patients. They need to be there for their patients. But now we're creating things that just sort of contribute and conspire to that sense of professional pride that can drive burnout.
I know I'm generalizing, but I did read an article recently that our female colleagues tend to be more detailed oriented when it comes to what they put into the EHR. Do we see any further impact on our female colleagues because of this?
Yeah, I don't know about, and I haven't seen data on being more detail focused, but we do see in most surveys that our female colleagues are more burnt out than our male colleagues. We talked about this pajama time. Well, despite the fact that I'd like to say society has made improvements in how we view the father's role in the home compared to the mother's, you can imagine that there's still a disproportionate share of home time or home tasks that are assumed by our female colleagues. And I think this also conspires to increase the risk of burnout.
How else has this affected our personal lives?
Lack of well-being or burnout can drive poor engagement at work, certainly decrease professional fulfillment. And this has been associated, and it's been well documented, it's been associated with diminished patient experience, quality and safety issues, decreased discretionary effort in the workplace, physicians reducing their FTE status or exiting the profession, and then all sorts of stories about disruptive behavior, issues with alcoholism, drug addiction, and then obviously the code blue of burnout being suicide.
So it's pretty much hitting all the pillars. It's affecting access, it's affecting productivity, it's affecting quality.
It definitely is. If you're an organization that's interested in things like quality and safety, patient experience, even financial performance, you have to address well-being. Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more. So have you seen this affect the lives of our colleagues over the years even further?
Well, Tom, I've been personally affected. I don't think I'd even heard of burnout until I returned in 2013 for my med school reunion in Toronto, only to find out that one of my med school friends and colleagues had taken his life just a few months before. His name was Craig. Craig used to come to my family home on long weekends during med school. Craig had become a very prominent surgeon. He performed the world's first telerobotic laparoscopic surgery, and I was shocked. And what was even more shocking is when you Googled Craig's story, because he was a famous surgeon, 2009, well-documented issues with alcoholism, the following year losing his medical license, losing privileges at hospitals, even a criminal case with witness tampering. And then most alarming was this description of a high-speed police chase across rural Ontario. So I found this shocking. In the subsequent years, I've seen this at a micro level in our organization. When I took on this role, I conducted a number of focus groups across different departments, different facilities in our organization. And I would ask folks what goes into a good day, and that's generally patient care. And then I'd ask them what goes into a bad day, and you'd hear all sorts of stories about practice inefficiencies. And one of the not surprising take-home messages was that drivers of burnout can vary from individual to individual. They can certainly vary department to department, and they can vary by specialty. And now I've also studied this data at a national and an organizational level. And despite the fact that physicians are more resilient than the general population, and this has been measured and proven, burnout rates for the past decade have sort of hovered around 45 to 55%. Now, I find that remarkable because in every other profession, higher levels of education are considered to be protective and have been shown to be protective against burnout. Being a physician is a risk factor for burnout.
That's great insight. And you've mentioned that you've been spending time with the clinicians over at Ochsner. What other perceptions did you come away with?
Yeah, I kind of put that, Tom, into two parts, sort of my perceptions pre-COVID. And talking to folks, I think there was the conclusion that while this is a professional crisis and addressing well-being is a national and organizational imperative, for individuals, this is a deeply personal issue. I remember talking to one cardiologist who described sitting in the car every morning, crying before being able to turn off the ignition. We talk in the studies about burnout being 50%, you know, present or absent. But it's not that way. It operates along a continuum within individuals and over time. And I do know that burnout can be impacted. What I've also learned talking to my colleagues is that this sense that the burden of addressing this needs to shift from employee to employer. And we need to develop a systems approach to improving practice efficiency, a systems approach to elevating the quality of our physician leaders, and a systems approach to promoting a culture of well-being. I can tell you, Ochsner is very committed to addressing these areas. Then I would say when COVID hit, and it's sort of interesting, pre-COVID, Tom, I've been very hesitant about using the word resilience with my physician colleagues because I was worried that they would interpret that as the organization saying, if you just do a little more yoga, everything's going to be okay.
Right.
But COVID hit and hit hard, and I've been amazed at how much more of an appetite there is to discuss resilience and mindfulness. So resilience at the individual level, resilience at the team level, and certainly organizational resilience. The other thing I've learned since COVID is this desire and need to really sort of destigmatize mental health discussions among our colleagues and really normalize these discussions. Those would be sort of things that I've heard recently.
I just couldn't agree more. But I certainly see that as best practice here at Vizient when we've spoken to many of our members around the nation. Leadership really counts. And being visible, taking it down to the basics of actually going on rounds and being out on the floors and clinicians' environment and hearing them out.
Yeah, as I said earlier, and this is pre-COVID data, the two biggest drivers of professional fulfillment, number one is practice efficiency, and number two is the quality of the one-over leader. And so these are incredibly important things. And these are things that we're trying to address at Ochsner.
Outstanding work. So how's this affected healthcare overall?
That's a great question. So in 2006, Don Berwick of the IHI coined the term the triple aim. And this term, the triple aim, was meant to serve as a compass to help healthcare organizations navigate the challenges of healthcare reform. And simply put, there were three goals: achieve better outcomes, achieve these outcomes at a lower cost, and with improved patient experience. And it wasn't until 8 years later that Dr. Bodenheimer and Sinsky introduced this concept of the quadruple aim. And that is, there needs to be a fourth goal to achieve these three important outcomes. And that is to address the health of those actually delivering healthcare to our patients. As we navigate through healthcare reform, we need the collective A game of our healthcare workers. And at a professional and organizational level, well-being, I believe, is a vehicle to help us drive change, execute on our strategy. And on the other hand, burnout's an existential threat to achieving these goals.
Mm-hmm. Nigel, thanks for joining us for this program today. We'll have you back next week to talk about dealing with administrative burden in practice. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Leadership Medical Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategy. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.